This is the Morrow Midday Show.
But wait, there's more.
On ESPN Radio.
Yes, it's back again. Sadie's back. Tell a friend. Guess who's back.
Final hour of the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Get to my picks coming up in just a few moments for the football weekend. Plus, we'll continue to get ready for the conference championship weekend. And look at how things could still change in the playoff picture, which Blue Blood may not make the playoff next year either. A whole lot more to get done here before we go for the football weekend. You can always join the conversation, 843-721-9500, to give us a call. You can always text the show, 843-608-1734. Get to us on Twitter, at Morrow Middays. You can leave a message for the show. You head on over to charlestonsportsradio.com. Click on our show page, and there you can leave a comment for the Morrow Midday Show. And if you ever miss anything from the show, don't worry. You can always find the show in its entirety on demand. Just click on our show page at charlestonsportsradio.com. Download our free app, ESPN Charleston, in the App Store, or search ESPN Radio Charleston however you listen to your podcast. We closed out last hour talking about Brian Kelly, who apparently has developed a Southern accent in no time once arriving to LSU over the past couple of days. Now, you ever have those friends, right? Maybe they studied abroad, or even they just went on a trip like with their family, or maybe even as adults. They went on a trip. In fact, I think that was an episode of Friends that Monica had, like, a college roommate that she didn't actually like, but they were like frenemy type of deal. And she went to London on a trip and has been talking like that ever since. And then she comes over, and it's the same actress that played Stifler's mom, a famous comedic actress. I can't think of her name right now. But then she's, you know, flirting. She's hitting on Chandler. Anyways. You've had those friends. They go on a trip. They're away for a week. They come back with some sort of accent. You think, what are you doing? You don't talk like that. Brian Kelly shows up in Louisiana, and last night, introducing himself to the crowd of the basketball game, suddenly now he's talking like he's grown up there his whole life. In fact, Joe, can you grab that? Let's hear Brian Kelly once again, just hear how he his new accent, how he was speaking last night to the crowd at the basketball game. And then also, he went Michael Scott on the whole bit. Michael Scott did this whole thing in The Office, if we compare it to another show. But I'm sure you've heard it by now. It's gone viral. Here was Brian Kelly, new head coach of LSU. Remember, he's from Boston, grew up in Boston, went to school there, and then he coached in the Northeast and then the Midwest. And now this is the first time he's in the South, and it took about 36 hours, just like that friend who studied abroad for a semester, and they haven't dropped the Australian accent ever since. Here was Brian Kelly last night saying hello to the LSU fans.
LSU, thank you. Thank you. Well, this is a great way to get started, and I haven't even won all my games yet. It's a great night to be a Tiger. I'm here with my family, and we are so excited to be in the great state of Louisiana, but more importantly, to be with you great fans and to be part of what is going to be an incredible ride here at Louisiana State University.
Last night, that was Brian Kelly. I can't remember who tweeted it, but somebody did compare him to Dusty Rhodes. Joe, what do you think as our wrestling expert? You think he sounds like Dusty? Do you think Brian Kelly's doing his best Dusty Rhodes impression last night at the basketball game?
Well, if he's trying to do a Dusty Rhodes impression, it's a very poor one. I don't know what's worse, this or Hillary Clinton with her "I ain't no ways tarred," well, that's, you know, thing she did, you know, about 5 years ago.
Well, that's what I said. He's the son of a politician, so this is, you know, I guess this is right up Brian's alley. He learned from the best. Politicians are the same. You know, they'll tell you whatever you want to hear just to try to get you on their side. Brian Kelly, I'm surprised he wasn't speaking, you know, with an Irish accent all that time at Notre Dame. Shows up at LSU, now suddenly he's a Southerner. It reminded me of Michael Scott in The Office, that third clip, Joe. Michael Scott doing the same thing in The Office when he was trying to pretend to talk like a Southerner and doing what he thought it took to sound like a Southerner.
Well, what is this contraption I do declare?
It's my BlackBerry, Michael. I'm trying to get updates on the company.
Who's Michael? I'm Caleb Crawdad, I do declare.
You don't have to keep saying I do declare. Anytime you say something, it means you're declaring. That is the way Southern people talk.
And what designing woman are you basing that on?
Delta Burke, I do declare.
What do you think? Do people say I do declare? Is that something you have to do in the South?
Oh, and only on TV shows and movies.
Should I be talking like that so that it sounds like I fit in here? Say I do declare after every... I think for every comment I make, Georgia's going to be Alabama tomorrow. I do declare. But Brian Kelly was like Michael Scott last night trying to fit in. Now, the question was asked on social media, you know, what is the worst fake accents you can think of? And everybody points to Nicolas Cage in Con Air, and many point to Keanu Reeves in, I don't know, pick whatever movie you want. Those are just two bad actors, though. So you could pick any type of movie in which Nick Cage has to do an accent or any type of acting. Or Keanu Reeves, same idea. Nick Cage in Con Air, that is a pretty bad accent he's trying to pull. They're just bad actors. But those are the two common examples that I saw online floating around when people were trying to compare this. Hillary Clinton came up. Sandra Bullock in The Blind Side, yeah, that's not bad. Her accent was very good. Usually it's people that are trying to do the Southern accent. That was the case in Con Air. Usually it's trying to nail that Southern accent. You could say Michael Scott there in The Office. Brian Kelly last night at LSU. I saw the trailer for the new movie coming out, Gucci, when they're all supposed to be Italians, but none of the actors or actresses are actually Italian. And so the accents in that movie that I saw in the trailer, they were pretty poor. It sounded almost more like Russian than Italian. But a lot of bad accents. Brian Kelly, the latest one. Somebody says here, Sean Connery's Russian accent in Red October. That's one of the worst fake accents. Ben Affleck in Pearl Harbor. Tom Cruise in American Made. Dennis Quaid in Big Easy. A lot of examples of bad accents. You go from Ed Ogeron to Brian Kelly. Sometimes you replace somebody and right, you think you have to be like them instead of just being yourself. So you had Ed Ogeron with his Go Tigers, and he was LSU in a nutshell. Here comes Brian Kelly, and maybe he just feels that pressure to have to try to fit in. But what do they always tell you growing up? Right? Just be yourself. If they don't like you for you, then you don't want to be friends with them anyways. Same with Brian Kelly. Coach, if they don't like you for who you are, then forget about them. Just be yourself. All right, every Friday I get to my picks on the show. It's time to do it now. Now, of course, there's fewer games to choose from. So I'm going to give you a few games in the conference championship games. Now, I wouldn't necessarily pick these games on a normal week, but because we only have X number of games to pick from college football, I'll give you a few picks there. Then, of course, we'll do our NFL picks. Let me give you the numbers first before we dive into this. We had a losing week last week. We went 4-6 a week ago, including 2-4 in college and then 2-2 in the NFL. Yes, I did get the Saints pick wrong last night. So we are 81-69 on the year, 81-69-3, still at 54%. Good, not great. And as I mentioned, 4-6 last week, a losing week. So we'll try to have a winning week now this week. I'll give you some college picks, NFL as well. Let's get to it, my picks of the week.
It's time to earn some cash.
Woo-hoo!
It's Luke's picks of the week.
Great cash, homie.
All right, let's start in college football where, again, I'm not telling you these would normally be included on a normal week, but hey, you can only pick what you can pick from. You can only choose what you can pick from here. So let me give you a couple of games in college football where I see them going. Starting tonight, Pac-12 title game, Oregon against Utah. Utah's favored by 3. Utah just blew out Oregon about 2 weeks ago. But in that game, number one, it was the worst performance for an Oregon team under Mario Cristobal. I expect a much better performance for them tonight against Utah. I don't think they could play that poorly twice against that team. Number two, I really like Kyle Whittingham at Utah, but I do think Oregon is the better team, and they're getting points here. Now, Oregon all time, they're undefeated in Pac-12 championship games. That doesn't matter so much for this team or this game, but what stands out to me the most is the number I relayed earlier in rematches in the Pac-12 championship game specifically. The team that lost the first matchup has won outright 6 of 7 times. It is hard to beat a team twice in a year in football. And Oregon in that game played terrible. They made a bunch of mistakes. They gave up a punt return touchdown. They had turnovers, things that you can't rely on game to game. So all that's to say, I think Oregon bounces back. I think they win tonight. I don't think they lose to Utah twice in a month. And they're a 3-point dog. I always like underdogs. So you're going to give me points as well. I'll take them. Let's roll with Oregon tonight to put together a better performance as a 3-point underdog. Moving to tomorrow, Baylor, Oklahoma State. Oklahoma State's favored by 5.5. Baylor probably will be without their starting quarterback. I haven't seen the latest there. I know it was questionable. I don't know if they've made a final determination. When these two teams played earlier this year, it was a 3-point game into the final 2 minutes. Oklahoma State scored a late touchdown to win by 10. Now, this line's 5.5, so if you win by a touchdown, you can cover. With that said, Oklahoma State, they've played a lot of close games against good teams. Against Oklahoma, they won by only 4. Against Texas, they won by 8. Against Baylor, it was a 3-point game in the final 2 minutes. Those are the 3 ranked teams they have faced. They haven't beaten any by more than 1 score. Additionally, you know, they lost to Iowa State, was a good team. They played a couple of other close games along the way. So my point being, Oklahoma State, all defensive teams are like this. They want to play close scoring games. They want to hang in there and eventually win with their defense. So 5.5, it's not a full touchdown. Oklahoma State could win by a touchdown and still cover. But I just think it's a lot of points for a game like this where you have the top 2 defenses. Do you expect one to try to pull away from the other? Is one even going to try to pull away from the other? Or are they going to let this come down to the fourth quarter? Plus, Baylor has a backup quarterback. We have a rule in the show. We love backup quarterbacks because that's where you can get value. People hear, oh, backup quarterback. No way they're going to win that game. And that inflates the number, and you could get a team with a better edge. I'm going to take Baylor even with the backup quarterback. I do think Oklahoma State wins the game, but 5.5 is a lot for a conference championship between 2 top 10 teams that played essentially a 1-possession game earlier this year. 5.5, and I know that's 1 possession, but I'm going to take Baylor. Elsewhere tomorrow, Michigan favored by 11 against Iowa. It's a big number. Iowa's going to need some turnovers in order to hang in there. The goal for Iowa, slow down the run of Michigan, force them to have to throw it, and then maybe you can get some turnovers. But I don't think Iowa, I don't know what the point total is in this game. I don't think there's a lot of points. I don't think Iowa can score very many points. I think Michigan will be able to run it on them. I think it'll be a close game. I think Michigan pulls away late. It's the opposite. I mean, I guess you could call it a backdoor cover, but it's one of, you know, it'll be a touchdown game, and then Michigan will get a late touchdown, end up winning by 14, something along those lines. I think Michigan covers. I think they win. I think they go to the playoff. Pittsburgh, Wake Forest. Pittsburgh's favored by 3. The point total in this game, I imagine, will be very high. I assume there's going to be a lot of points. The difference to me, they're both top 5 offenses. They both have quarterbacks who had really good years. Wake Forest's defense, you know, couldn't stop a nosebleed. Pittsburgh's defense, at least you could get after the quarterback. They can sack the quarterback. Pittsburgh has the better defense. Pittsburgh's also 9-3 against the spread. Wake Forest 500. I think the difference in this game, I think you're going to see a lot of points. But the difference will be Pittsburgh will get after Hartman. Sam Hartman has completed fewer than half of his passes when pressured this year. Pittsburgh has 5 sacks or more in half their games this year. They'll get after the quarterback. Maybe they'll force Hartman into a turnover. And to win by 3, to cover 3 in an offensive game like this, it may only take 1 stop to prove to be the difference. So I think they'll pressure Hartman. I think they'll get a turnover or 2 from him. I think you sack him, right? Maybe it's a 3rd down play. I think Pittsburgh will be able to get enough stops, more than Wake Forest. Maybe only a couple of stops, but that may be all it takes. I think Pittsburgh will score a bunch of points, and their defense will slow down Wake Forest just enough. Give me Pittsburgh favored by 3. And then lastly, Georgia-Alabama. I have really struggled with this game. I'll probably bet it because it's the biggest game of the weekend, and I like to have a little action on, you know, the big games. But it's one that I always tell my buddies, if you don't bet just to bet. Bet when you feel confident. This is a game that I'm on the fence. With that said, to give a pick for this game, I think I got to go Georgia. Now, Saban is 5-0 straight up against number one teams in the postseason. He is also 4-1 against the spread, actually straight up, as an underdog at Alabama. But some other numbers in Georgia's favor. Georgia's 10-3 against the spread last 13 neutral site games. They've spread in five straight. They're 4-1 against the spread against teams with winning records this year. And when you look at Alabama, they're only 500 against the spread this year. Kept accounting on Alabama to be the Alabama we were expecting. They haven't done that all year. In fact, they have not covered the spread in their last three SEC games. Look back at Alabama's last three conference games. Favored by 29 against LSU, they won by only 6. Favored by 21 against Arkansas, they won by only 7. Favored by 21 against Auburn, they won in 4 overtimes. Should have lost the game. So, I started the show talking about this. It's like the high school reunion. You haven't seen people since you were in high school maybe 20 years ago. And you expect one thing, and you show up, and things have changed in those 20 years, and it takes you by surprise. Right? The girl that you had the crush on, not anymore. And the guy used to bully, actually, he's pretty cool now. Right? In this case, Georgia, this isn't the same Georgia team that's lost to Alabama in recent years. This isn't the same Alabama team that's beaten those Georgia teams. I'm going to take Georgia 6.5 points. It is tough to pass on Saban as that large of an underdog. But I heard it put this way, and I like it. I'd rather lose because Georgia did not perform like they have all year, as opposed to trying to bet on Alabama expecting they're going to do something they haven't all year. Right, I'm betting, by taking Georgia, you bet on what you've seen this year continuing. I'll be more surprised if Alabama puts together the best game of the season and Georgia does not than I would be surprised if Georgia comes out and just takes care of business and rolls, if I explain that properly. So I'll take my chances with Georgia, 6.5-point favorite. All right, let's get to the NFL. We always include the local teams. The Panthers are on a bye. The Falcons are 11-point underdog at home against Tampa. The Buccaneers have not been good against the number on the road. Now, Matt Ryan's never beaten Tampa Bay. I don't think the Falcons win this game. But, man, at home, 11-point dog, that is a lot of points. I got to roll with Atlanta. That would mean in Tampa, this would be a 17-point spread. The Falcons are not good. The Buccaneers are defending Super Bowl champs, but that's just too many points for me to swallow. I'm going to take the Falcons. Tom Brady has not been great. He's the number 17 quarterback over the past month. So, 11 points is a lot on the road. I'll take the Falcons to try to keep it close into single digits. Sometimes in gambling, you do things that make you feel bad, right? Make you feel like dirty. You got to take a shower after. That's the case here. Betting on the Falcons? Who knows? And you push the button. But you bet numbers, not teams, and that is a big number for a home team in a divisional game. I got to roll with the Falcons. Chargers-Bengals. Bengals favored by 3 at home against the Chargers. This is one of those classic bounce-back spots. When you bet on teams that did not cover the spread the week prior against teams that did, you would be winning 3/4 of the time. You'd have a third house by now. The Chargers did not cover the spread last week against the Broncos. Cincinnati did more than cover the spread. They blew out the Steelers. But now you bank on the emotional letdown. They just beat one of their rivals by 30 last week. Now they have the Chargers coming in who just lost by double digits. Maybe you take the Chargers lightly. Maybe you feel a little too good about yourself. Meanwhile, Justin Herbert does have the top QBR in the NFL. So don't sleep on him, the Chargers, and their ability offensively. They've been inconsistent, but I'm going to bet on them to bounce back in this game. So give me the Chargers, 3-point dog at Cincinnati. Elsewhere in the NFL, I told you I like backup quarterbacks. I'm going to take Mike Glennon. The Dolphins are favored by 6 at home against the Giants. Let's be real here. I know the Dolphins have won 4 games in a row. Should they be favored by a touchdown against anybody? A month ago, they were 1-7. Tua has played well, but should Tua be favored by a touchdown against anyone, even a Mike Glennon? This number jumped. It was 2.5 about 48 hours ago. And since the news of Daniel Jones, it's gone up almost 4 points. Do we really think Daniel Jones is worth 4 points? Because I don't. This number's too big. Now, the Dolphins just blew out the Panthers last week, but if you watch that game, there was a blocked punt. Cam Newton had two interceptions. The Dolphins, that was more about the Panthers playing terribly than the Dolphins beating a team by 30. So I think the Dolphins are overvalued. I think the Giants with their backup quarterback are undervalued. I'm not telling you the Giants are going to win the game, but 6 points, that is way too many for a Dolphins team. So give me the Giants as a 6-point underdog. The Dolphins have only one more win than the Giants this year. These are two bad teams, two quarterbacks that are nothing special. 6 points, way too much. I will take the Giants. I had another pick or two. Oh, Ravens-Steelers. The Ravens and the Steelers. The Steelers are 4.5-point dogs at home against the Ravens. Home dogs in divisional games, they cover about 65% of the time. If you could get a divisional team getting points at home, you take them. Now, the Steelers, I told you about the whole rubber band thing earlier. I thought the Steelers, you're waiting on them to bounce back. But some teams are just bad. They never do bounce back, and you're going to lose a lot of money constantly betting on them to bounce back. So this is kind of the last effort for the Steelers. They let me down last week in embarrassing fashion, but I like to bet on teams that got embarrassed because these guys are pros. Say what you will about Ben Roethlisberger, Mike Tomlin. I don't think they had a very good week this week after getting embarrassed. Mike Tomlin's a Hall of Fame coach. Ben Roethlisberger has enough pride. They're not going to go out there and just lay an egg, especially against their rival this week in Baltimore. So I think the Steelers bounce back. 4.5-point dog at home. Yeah, please. Right, everyone was looking at that game last week. They got blown out by Cincinnati. It's a week-to-week business. Ignore last week's results. On the flip side, the Ravens, they won a game, but Lamar Jackson threw 4 interceptions. So should they go the road and now be favored by 4.5? And lastly, since Harbaugh got to Baltimore, he is 13-13 against Pittsburgh. 500. 20 of those 26 games decided by one possession. 17 of the 26 decided by 4 points or less. And in this series, since Harbaugh has arrived, favorites of 3 points or more have gone 1-13-2 against the spread. They have covered the spread just 1 out of 16 times. The underdogs do well in this series, and they're all close games decided by only a point or two. The Steelers haven't won any of their last 3 games. Do we think they're going to lose a 4th straight? They're now at home, coming off an embarrassment, rivalry game, 4.5-point dog. I know it sounds crazy after last week, and I said the same thing last week, and the Steelers let me down, but I love Pittsburgh this week. This is probably my favorite number on the board this weekend. And lastly, last one in the NFL real quick, Broncos, Chiefs. The Broncos are 10-point underdogs against Kansas City. I know the Chiefs have been playing much better over the past month, but they're only 1 game better than Denver. Should they be favored by 10 against the Broncos? That number seems too big. And while the Chiefs' defense has been playing well over the past month, the offense still has not looked right. It has not looked like what we were expecting from Patrick Mahomes. And they go up against a Broncos defense that has been top 10 this year. In fact, they've allowed the 3rd fewest points in the league. So it's hard to beat a team by double digits when they only let you score, on average, 17 points per game. And Teddy Bridgewater, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but he's excellent as an underdog, something like 60% against the spread as a dog, especially when he's a dog on the road. You saw it in Carolina all last year. He may not win games, but he'll cover the spread. 10 points, way too much on Sunday Night Football when it's a battle for first place. These two teams are separated by 1 game. Divisional game, 1 game apart, 10-point spread, too much. So give me the Broncos. And there you go. 10 picks this weekend, 5 in the NFL, 5 in college. We'll roll with the Falcons. We'll hold our nose and take the Falcons. And then the Chargers, the Giants, yes, even with Mike Glennon, bet on backup quarterbacks. And then the Steelers and the Broncos in the NFL. And in college football, we're rolling with Oregon tonight, Baylor, Michigan, Pittsburgh, and then we're going to go with Georgia. I'll take my chances that Georgia finishes the job. I'll take my chances that what we've seen over 12 games will play out again tomorrow, where Georgia has shown themselves to be the better team than Alabama. I think that's the safer bet than betting that this is the time Alabama turns it on and beats Georgia, who clearly has been the better team all year long, that this is the time Georgia plays their worst game of the season. It very well could happen. Nick Saban is the greatest coach in college football history. He's 3-0 against Kirby Smart. He's only lost to one assistant. I think it's 24-1 against former assistants. It very well could happen. I wouldn't be that surprised, but I have a larger sample size this year of Georgia playing better football than Alabama, so I'm going to take my chances tomorrow. I think that's the safe bet, even at 6.5. All right, coming up, more on that SEC title game. Plus, how will this weekend potentially impact the playoff picture? What are the different scenarios? And which blue blood may not get back to the playoff next year either? It's the Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
You're listening to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Coming up, potential playoff scenarios for this weekend in college football and which blue blood may not get back even next year to the playoff in college football. We'll get to that here on the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. This may be the best Christmas song of all time. That's right. I said it. It's definitely on the Mount Rushmore. I would tell you, for me personally, because of course we all have different tastes, I would tell you that I have the definitive list. Whatever I say is most accurate. This song or Stevie Wonder's Someday at Christmas. Those are my two favorite Christmas songs. I think those are the two best. Now, this is Darlene Love. This song, that's from 1962. I think they could remaster it. If you hear that, it sounds like such an old song, an old version. Why don't we get a remastered version? But it's such a great song. And what's amazing is that Darlene Love is now 80. You know, if you're a late night fan, she performed that on Letterman for 25 years straight, which really brought the song. She said herself in interviews that song came out in 1962 on an album of Christmas songs. And then it really kind of got overlooked until Letterman liked the song. He heard it, and he really liked it. It was his favorite Christmas song, so he started bringing her on the show, the final show before Christmas every year, starting in like 85, 84, something like that. And that's what really brought that song back to the forefront. It's been used in movies now, and she performed it every year until Letterman signed off the air. Now she does it on The View. And so I'm sure she'll do it on The View here in the next couple of weeks, because I'm sure we have so many crossover viewers. People that listen to sports talk are huge fans of The View, so I'm sure you're looking forward to Darlene Love's performance. She's 80. I fell down a rabbit hole of watching these performances last week, I think while I was on the road. You know, you're in a hotel, there's not much to do. I fell down a rabbit hole on YouTube of watching Darlene Love. Anyways, I watched the one from like 2 years ago. She's 78. Number one, she looks great. Number two, her voice is still great. She was out there on The View 2 years ago belting out that song. It sounded great for a 78-year-old. Very impressed. So she's 80 now. I assume she's going to keep this streak alive. It's been like 30 straight years that she performs it on some show before Christmas. So I'm sure she will. But that's a great song. Now, it was written by, not by her, by Phil Spector, who we have since discovered over the years that he was a very deranged person, in fact, a murderer as well. But he was a great, you know, record producer. And I love that song. As I said, it may be the best Christmas song of all time. But if I'm being honest, the lyrics to begin the song are pretty weak. Now, I've always been a big fan of music, and I've played instruments, not well, but I've tried to play instruments my whole life, going back to I first took guitar lessons when I was, I think, 5 years old in first grade. And I always used to try to write lyrics, and I never could. I just can't write songs. Some people have that ability. Now, I was trying back when I was, like, you know, a really young kid, so I also didn't have life experience. But the way that that song starts, that sounds like a lyric I would write. The first two lines, right? The snow is falling down. Or the snow is, what's it? The snow is coming down. I'm watching it fall. Very basic. Just explaining what's going on. It's snowing outside, and I'm watching it snow. Kind of repetitive. And then later on, the Christmas tree is lit up. I'm watching it glow. Kind of basic lyrics. That's something I would write when I was trying to write songs back when I was 12 years old. But with that said, it's a great song. And by the way, because I'm giving you more than you ever thought you needed for Darlene Christmas songs, but she later came out with All Alone on Christmas in the 80s. It was used in Home Alone 2, I think it was. It was written by Steven Van Zandt, Little Stevie from the E Street Band. And that's another good Christmas song as well. So Darlene Love, she's got some good Christmas hits. Came out with a bunch in the 60s. And then the All Alone on Christmas in the 80s. That's another good one. And Stevie Wonder as well. Those are, for me, the two goats of Christmas songs. Stevie Wonder and Darlene Love. And I have to admit, I've been listening to them quite a bit here over the past week as I've been getting into the Christmas music as well. All right. With all that said, I could talk Christmas music all day with you. We have the college football championship weekend coming up. What are the different scenarios for the college football playoff? If you don't have, you know, a horse in the race here, you don't have a dog in the fight, that's probably not a good expression. If you don't have a favorite team playing this week and you're sitting back just watching the games, you may be wondering, what are the different scenarios? In fact, I could tell you, it's always one of my favorite things to do. My brother and I, we're tortured Vikings fans, and so they're always on the bubble trying to make the playoff. And once you get towards Christmas, right, we're using the playoff, the ESPN playoff machine, whatever they call it, and looking at the different scenarios. Okay, to get into the playoffs, we need this to happen and this to happen. And you figure out the different scenarios. And then you watch the games. Okay, we need this team to lose. And then you watch and you root against them. So the different scenarios for the college football playoff, if you're just an average fan or your team's not involved and you're sitting there thinking like, okay, what are the different scenarios? Who do I want to see in the playoff? Who do I need to win what? I think it's pretty easy to figure out. Obviously, if things go chalk, if the favorites win this weekend, then we will have Georgia, Michigan, Cincinnati, Oklahoma State. I believe that will be the four. Alabama with a loss will be removed. And if everybody, all the other favorites win, Michigan, of course, will be in. Georgia, of course, will be in. Cincinnati, you got to put them in. They're undefeated and win their conference, and there's not enough competition around them. And then Oklahoma State, a one-loss Big 12 champ that's beaten a handful of ranked teams, you got to put them in. Alabama with two losses, you're out. And then Notre Dame, SOL. You didn't win a conference championship. So with your one loss, I'm taking Oklahoma State, who would have more wins against ranked teams, more wins against Power 5 teams, would have a conference championship victory. I would take Oklahoma State over Notre Dame for that last spot. If things go chalk this weekend, I think that's our four. If the favorites all win this weekend. Now, how often do the favorites always win in football? Usually doesn't happen. We usually get at least a couple of upsets, at least one or two. So then if Alabama beats Georgia, you'll have Alabama, you'll have Georgia, and then I would say Michigan, if they win, they're in. Cincinnati, if they win, they're in. And then Oklahoma State, sorry, as a one-loss team, you're left out. I'm taking Michigan over you, and I'm taking Alabama, one-loss SEC champ, and Georgia, one-loss non-SEC champ, over Oklahoma State. I think you can make a pretty good argument, though, about Oklahoma State compared to a Michigan, or certainly Oklahoma State compared to Cincinnati in terms of a tougher schedule. But I think Oklahoma State and Notre Dame will be left out in that scenario. Now continue with me here. And granted, this is probably an easier exercise with some sort of visual instead of just hearing all the different scenarios over the radio. But if you're Notre Dame, I think you would need Alabama to lose, and I think you need Oklahoma State to lose. And in that scenario, then you would have Georgia, you would have Michigan, you would have Cincinnati, and I would take Notre Dame as that fourth team. Notre Dame would have one loss. That would be better than Alabama with two, Oklahoma State with two. It's probably interchangeable between Michigan and Oklahoma State. You need one of those two to fall. If I'm Notre Dame, I think you need Alabama to lose and then Michigan or Oklahoma State to lose, and you could sneak into the top four. Or maybe just simply Cincinnati losing. Now, Cincinnati beat Notre Dame, but you'd have two teams, both with one loss, neither one's a conference champion, and Notre Dame having played a better schedule than Cincinnati. Maybe you just need a Cincinnati to lose, and you jump them that way. Maybe it's that simple. I don't know. But then we get to the chaotic version. If you're rooting for chaos, well, then you're rooting for all the underdogs, which could lead to a two-loss team making the playoff for the first time. And it may not be Alabama either. If Alabama loses, and let's say Michigan loses, and Oklahoma State loses, and we have a bunch of two-win conference champions, okay, well, then in that scenario, what if Oregon wins tonight? So now you're trying to put together a playoff field. And say, whether Alabama wins or loses, let's just say Alabama wins. Then you have Alabama, you have Georgia. Let's say Cincinnati wins. Okay, you take Cincinnati. Then that fourth spot, you're choosing between a two-loss conference champion. You've already taken Alabama because the SEC is the best conference. But then who gets that last spot as a two-loss conference champion? I mean, you could take Notre Dame, so then in this scenario, maybe we would need Alabama to lose. And then you'd have Notre Dame, and you'd have Georgia, and you'd have Cincinnati. And that fourth spot would come down to either a two-loss Big Ten champ, a two-loss Big 12 champ, or a two-loss Pac-12 champion. And here's the thing. If you wanted to compare, well, Oregon, of their two losses, one of them was to Utah. They got blown out. But if they win tonight to win the conference, they will have beaten Utah, which may wipe out, right? May turn it into a wash. They avenge that loss. So if you were picking between two lost conference champions, maybe you go Oregon because one of the losses they had, they made up for it. Almost makes them like having one loss or one and a half loss, which puts them ahead of those other two lost champs, like what would be an Iowa if they win, or a Baylor if they win the Big 12. So there still is a path for even, say, an Oregon for the Pac-12. Maybe. Maybe it's very small. Maybe it's very minor. But there still could be a path for a two-loss team to make the playoff for the first time with somebody like an Oregon. Those are some of these scenarios to keep an eye out on. Now, that's how I would see it playing out. Doesn't mean that's what the committee would do. That's the vexing part about all this, is that it's not so black and white. like the NFL, where the NFL, you know, okay, if this team loses, this team wins, okay, then that team gets to go in. It's very black and white in the NFL, and you can play out the different scenarios in the playoff machine. You can do that to a certain degree in college football, and ESPN has a playoff machine and will give you the percentages, but at the end of the day, all that percentage represents is a potential prediction of the committee. That's what you're trying to come up with. Which way is the committee going to go? Instead of in the NFL, it's simply based off of wins and losses. You know, okay, yeah, they're in that scenario. If this happens, this happens, this happens, oh, it's that team that goes. In college, we say, well, if this happens, this happens, this happens, I think, I would guess, I would predict the committee's going to pick that team. But at the end of the day, the committee may surprise you. So those are some of the potential, as I see it, potential scenarios. But with all of that said, everything I just mentioned may be proven moot because at the end of the day, the committee may not go the typical path or the expected path or the way they should go, and they may pick some random team or make some odd decision after the weekend, and you think, what the heck did they just do? So it's still, there's plenty of unpredictability in all of this. But those are some of the paths that if certain things happen, that's what I think will be the outcomes. Right? If we go chalk, if all the favorites win, I think we're looking at a playoff field of Georgia, Michigan, Cincinnati, Oklahoma State. Now, you usually don't expect chalk. I think the teams that have the best chances to upset this weekend, Alabama-Georgia is the easy one to pick. And then if I'm looking elsewhere, I mean, Michigan and Cincinnati are both double-digit favorites. Maybe you don't trust Cincinnati. Houston is good. So maybe you don't think Houston can get it done. But I would probably say Oklahoma State. Now, Baylor may not have their starting quarterback. But Oklahoma State is still, the Big 12 is always so topsy-turvy. And Oklahoma State, this is their first time on this big stage in 17 years. They don't have, you know, years built up where you can count on them. If there is one team to let you down, would we really be surprised if it was the Big 12 and if it was Oklahoma State against a good Baylor team, top 10 matchup between those two? But if we get chalk this weekend where all the favorites win out, then I think we're getting set when we come in on Monday for a playoff field that will look like Georgia, Michigan, Cincinnati as the three, Oklahoma State the four, is what I would guess. We'll see if that's the case. Notre Dame needs a little help. Oregon, I think, could win out if we get the ultimate chaos this year and we're choosing between two lost teams. Maybe Oregon has the clearest path of those two lost teams at that point. But they're still alive. You can maybe make a case for an Iowa if they win on Saturday and get some help. If chaos unfolds tomorrow, right, then some teams can really creep back into the playoff conversation. And then it gets really tough for the committee. The committee's probably hoping for chalk this weekend because it makes their job very easy. They don't have to do much. The thing will decide itself. We'll see how it plays out this weekend, but you know there's usually some upsets. And usually one or two you don't see coming. Coming up, we'll continue to get ready for the SEC title game. And if we have the time, otherwise we'll wait till Monday, call that a potential long-term tease, which blue blood may not get back to the playoff as soon as next year. We'll get to that as well. The Football Fridays, we get ready for a big weekend in college football. It's the Morrow Midday Show here on ESPN Radio.
Now back to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Joe caught me. He got me. I said last segment I gave you my top two Christmas songs. How could I forget the Christmas song from my very favorite?
Yeah, you're supposed to be a big Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers fan.
Yeah, I forgot about this one. It is a good one. I got to be honest, if I'm choosing Christmas songs, I go to Stevie Wonder first. And I go to that song, last one, by Darlene Love. I listen to those certainly more often than I do this song. I don't play this one very often, actually. I like the song. I love Tom Petty. I guess I'll have to put this number three. They use this on Home Alone 2, which I love. Right? You take my favorite Christmas movie, my favorite artist, you blend it together. Please. Right up my alley. I watched the new Home Alone. They rebooted it. They call it, what is it called? Home Alone. It's not a number. It has a new name. Home All Alone, something like that. And it's got the kid from Jojo Rabbit. I watched it last week. I got to tell you, I actually liked it. Now, it is very much, it's shot like a, it's a Disney film. It's shot like a Disney film. It's hard to explain, but when you watch it, you know what I'm talking about. And it's like over-the-top corny. It's different than the original Home Alones. The original Home Alones may be like family films, but when you watch them, it looks like any other movie, and it's not that over-the-top like cheese ball where the new one is. It's very like four families. Even the way the movie ends, I'm not going to spoil anything, but it's very much, you know, for family and like for kids. But I got to tell you, I literally laughed out loud multiple times. It's got a pretty good cast, some funny people in there. And there was a couple of different scenes that actually made me laugh out loud. I was going in thinking like, it's just going to be a dumb movie, but I love the Home Alones. I got to watch it. Anytime you come out with a new film, I'm going to watch it. And I thought it's going to be really stupid. I was actually entertained. I enjoyed it. So I recommend it. Long story short, I recommend it, especially if you got kids, you got a family, whatever. If you like the original Home Alones, people make fun of the Home Alones, especially, you know, adults. Like, I'm an adult now, still liking Home Alone. Those are great movies. I will not stand for any Home Alone slander. The first two are great movies, and this newest one, it's good enough that I think it'll entertain you for 90 minutes, especially if you're watching it with your kids.
And there is an appearance by someone from the first two movies.
That's true. You don't want to spoil it?
Do you want to? I mean, no, it's not. It's not.
No, it's not Kevin McAllister.
No.
Yeah, it's his.
Macaulay Culkin, of course, is his real name. But no, it's not him. No. But it is someone in the family.
Yes. Originally, I guess Macaulay Culkin was supposed to be in it. And then he came out and said, actually, no, I'm not going to be in the new film. But there is somebody else. Now, that's the thing. The reason why I got on the subject is because that Tom Petty song was used in Home Alone 2. They brought it back in this one. And there was a lot of things that they did that were exactly the same as one of the first two Home Alones, so there's plenty of callbacks, but then it ends up going in a different direction than the originals. So it's not a remake, it's a reboot. Anyways, I watched it last week. It passed the test. Not a great movie by any stretch. Certainly not anywhere close to the first two. But, you know, for a reboot 20 years later and like the fifth version of the film series, because came out with Home Alone 3 and then direct to VHS, like 4 and 5. It is pretty good. It's on Disney Plus, so there you go. Plus a plug for Disney Plus. We're an ESPN affiliate, ESPN owned by Disney, so hey, I'm being a company man in the process. This holiday season, check out the new Home Alone. All right, with that said, I've spent enough time talking about Christmas music and now the new Home Alone that when we come back, I'll put my finishing thoughts on this Football Friday. For a championship weekend. We'll get ready for most notably the SEC title game, which comes up tomorrow. It's the game of the year so far on paper. We'll see if it lives up to expectation. We'll get back to football to wrap up your Friday next. It's the Mar Midday Show here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
What a funky finish here, Football Friday, here on the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. Starting next week, Tuesday will be 12 shows until Christmas, right? 12 days of Christmas for us. We'll start our final 12 days until Christmas on Tuesday. Maybe with some Christmas facts. After I was wondering on air yesterday, what's the origin story for many of our Christmas traditions? Coming down the home stretch 3 weeks until the holiday. Hey, if you ever miss anything from the show, you can always catch it on demand. Search ESPN Radio Charleston however you listen to your podcast. You can also find the podcast online at charlestonsportsradio.com or through our free app. Just search ESPN Charleston in the App Store. And this allows me the opportunity to remind you that you could take the Morrow Midday Show with you wherever you go. Just simply stream us online, charlestonsportsradio.com or through TuneIn Radio, your smart speaker, or a free app, ESPN Charleston in the App Store. Appreciate listeners checking in from at least 11 different states and multiple countries here on this Friday afternoon. All right, before we go, let's end how we started, focusing on the SEC title game, Georgia-Alabama. I gave you my picks earlier. You can go back and find them on demand. But I am taking Georgia. I think Georgia wins the game. I feel much more confident about that. That 6.5 is a large number in terms of a betting perspective. But the only reason why I believe you would want to be on Alabama is because Nick Saban and the past history. which is why I compared this game to like a high school reunion where you have not seen your class, or a college reunion, either way, right? You have not seen your classmates. Let's say you moved out of town. You haven't seen your classmates in just say 20 years. You haven't gone to any of the other reunions. Now you're home for the holidays, having the 20-year reunion. You think, oh, it's been a long time. Let me go check in. And the people that were, you know, the attractive, good-looking people in high school, that's how you've pictured them for years. That's what you're expecting to see when you walk into that the bar, the auditorium, wherever you're having your reunion. You walk in and you see them and you think like, oh, whoa, that's what they look like now? And vice versa for the people that, you know, or maybe the nerds that you used to push into lockers and everything. Right now it's like, oh, actually they're pretty cool. What a jerk I was back then. Point being, things change. And if you struggle to see the change, you're going to fall behind. If you continue to see that person through the lens of high school 20 years ago, you're going to be out on your own. Things are different. That's not who they are anymore. And I say all that because if you base it off of just recent years, it's not who Georgia is anymore. This is the better Georgia team of the last couple of years. It's not who Alabama is anymore. This is the worst Alabama team of those last couple of years when these two teams have played. In fact, Georgia today is a lot like Alabama was going back about 5+ years ago. So I'm going to bank on Georgia getting it done because they have shown throughout this year they are the better team. If they lose this game, though, my goodness, Kirby Smart, I can't defend you anymore. But here's a chance to make up for those first impressions in this series history for Kirby Smart. And we would all love that opportunity. Georgia has that opportunity tomorrow. Whatever happens this weekend, we'll be here Monday to break it down. Life is a series of hellos and goodbyes. For now, we say goodbye. We'll say hello again Monday at noon. It's the Moore Midday Show on ESPN Radio.